Hello and welcome back to the MJA podcast. I'm Kate Swanell. Today my special guest is Professor Ian Hickey from the University of Sydney's Brain and Mind Centre. We're going to be talking about Project Synergy, an innovation in mental health care provision which is being trialled and developed using digital technologies. The hope is that Project Synergy will turn mental health care into a user-driven, needs-based service. You've written about the Uberization of mental health care. What do you actually mean by Uberization?
In a range of industries, we've seen the effect of new technology-based platforms lead to total transformation in the way those industries happen. So the classic example being Uber in the personal transport industry, the taxi industries, the hire car industries, never expected an alternative industry based on technology to suddenly emerge in their own backyard and completely overturn their business model. The same thing's happened in personal accommodation through Airbnb type sets of issues and international travel and a range of other areas where basically technology-based platforms which empower the user to have choice, to have their needs met, to be convenient, and actually to comment on the quality of the service has disrupted many other industries. Now, the assumption is in healthcare, it can't happen. In healthcare, the assumption's been the hospitals, the doctors, the operating theatres, the clinics, the regulation around safety of care would mean that such a thing could not happen in the healthcare industry.
But mental health is the classic case where it could, surely.
In my view, technologies will actually disrupt many areas of health. But one of the first and most profound is going to be in mental health. In fact, it's not a prediction about the future. It's already happening because these transformations, these major disruptions happen in situations where there's community demand that is not being met by the existing services. Either the size of the demand or the quality of the offering is not matching the community desire or need for that service. And that is absolutely the case with mental health, not just in Australia, but worldwide. We are still using 20th century approaches to a 21st century problem. We're still trying to build clinics and offices and services through GPs, through psychologists, through psychiatrists, through peer workers, through lay workers to try and meet this tremendous unmet need for services and actually for quality services, not just for any service. This is not just simply, are you okay, have a chat with someone, check with your friends, see whether someone can help. Many, many people have serious problems with suicidality, substance abuse, emerging major mental illness, who need real care, quality care, ongoing, and cannot have that need met by current services or the way that we're trying to currently grow those services through traditional profession-based clinics.
But a lot of people would say that the whole basis of mental health care is that therapeutic relationship, and surely that can only happen face-to-face?
So historically, the personal approach to mental health care has said it's the personal interaction that matters. Now, that's despite the fact that we've had evidence since the 1980s that people quite like talking to computers. And in fact, computers don't frown, they don't fall asleep, they're available 24/7. And when it comes to the therapeutic effect, at least for common problems like anxiety and depression, the efficacy of the intervention seems to be as good through the computer interface as it is in the person-to-person situation. Now, there may be an issue of horses for courses here, but the notion that a person and the face or the disapproving face or the falling asleep person or the one that's only there 9 to 5, or the one that costs a lot of money to see and is only available in the middle of a large city and you're living in rural or regional Australia or you're living in one of our outer suburbs, that somehow that thing is the gold standard is an historical approach and a belief system of really the earliest 20th century. And really, we've had good evidence since the 1980s that automated interfaces, skills-based teaching from automated interfaces, may well be highly effective. It's not the same, but it may well be highly effective. So, unfortunately, it's one of those areas of healthcare where historical and cultural practice and beliefs about it just often doesn't match the evidence.
Tell us about Project Synergy, how it came about and what it's been up to since 2014.
So the background of Project Synergy is in fact what has happened in the youth mental health area over the last decade. So we're very lucky that a thing called the Young and Well Cooperative Research Centre, set up by Professor Jane Burns and colleagues both at the University of Melbourne and here at the University of Sydney, was working on youth mental health developments in developing web-based services for young people for suicide prevention and mental health. A realisation by first the Abbott government and then the Turnbull government that the implications of that were far greater than just for youth mental health, that the potential to overcome issues related to quality service provision for veterans, for people living in rural and regional Australia, for children, for adults, for older people, it was actually tremendous. Led to an investment by the Turnbull government out of the 2016 election in developing this platform further and testing this platform further in a variety of different settings. So continuing the work in youth mental health, but actually extending way beyond. Many people think technology is something just young people do. Nothing could be further from the truth. Technology is used by everyone from very young ages right through now. And in fact, those who are more isolated, disabled, less able to participate, actually rely more on technology now. And many of the problems we've had of connecting to people with mental health problems through distance, through disability, through other geographical or economically based barriers and cultural based barriers can be overcome with technology. Yep. So the Turnbull government was smart enough to say, look, what we need to do is develop this platform at scale and then test and trial it in a variety of populations. Now, to do that, the really important issue here is one of co-design, co-production. If you're going to develop technologies, quite different to clinical trials where you make a new pill and then go test it in a population, for technologies and the way they operate, these are highly personalised. You need to develop them with the populations that you intend to use those particular issues. So our background with the Young and Well CRC was how to do this with young people in the context of Project Synergy. We've been doing this with veterans, with older people, with parents of children, in other particular populations, with Indigenous populations, with other socially isolated youth populations, to co-design and co-produce. So the co-production, the background technology is relatively simple and rapidly developing. The technology into healthcare is not a technology problem. It's a people problem.
Yes.
It's how do we use these things effectively with those groups of people that we hope will actually use them. It's also a clinical problem.
Yeah.
It's also getting clinicians and clinics to accept that people can be partners in care through the appropriate use of these technologies. So it changes the power balance in clinics and other areas. People can put in information, they can track, they can participate, they can have choices. Now, not all clinical services are up to that. Many clinical services are very top-down. You will get what we do.
Yes.
As distinct from showing, here's your range of sets of needs. You can put much more information in. Funny thing, people say people won't provide information. You bet they will if it's about themselves to get a better service. In fact, they're dying to tell services, I have many needs, not just one.
Yes. You
know? And actually, these systems allow those needs to be expressed and essentially say to services, you need to get your act together, either within your own service or in partnership with other services, to meet these needs.
Yeah,
so very challenging to the service environment to go down this road. You know, you're not just dealing with a passive user of services. You're suddenly dealing with an empowered and articulate user of services that said, hey, I got a bunch of needs. I got a mental health problem, a substance abuse problem, an employment problem. I got other issues related to isolation. Can you help? I got a physical health problem to boot. Can you help with this range of problems? Can we agree what I do, what you do, who else needs to be involved to start to deal with these issues? So what we emphasize here is not just that technology has the power to transform, but in deploying that technology, working with, co-producing the particular solution is critical if that solution is going to be used by the relevant population.
What does the platform look like, Ian? Are we talking a website? Are we talking app? Are we talking telehealth? What are we looking at?
So you're essentially talking about a web-based application. So services, if someone using a service would come into the system through an invitation, email-based invitation, to come to a web-based application, which then they provide information to. That is housed, essentially, within the service.
Right.
So if you're a particular youth service or a veteran service or an aged care service, you're the service provider. What the person sees is a dashboard and a platform that appears to be coming to that person from the actual service. In a sense, the clinical governance then and what's in that service and what is being offered is controlled not by the technology platform but by that service itself. What it's really allowing the service to do, though, is collect a tremendous amount of information before you arrive and then hopefully design the service that you need and then track with you which of the outcomes of that intervention are most relevant and which you're focusing on. Cool. And see where that is happening. There's another important thing, which is essentially deal with the waiting list problem, meaning you're immediately providing options in response to the person that are personalised, they're relevant to them. But also, if there's an urgency that they receive more urgent care, in our case through suicide notifications or through abnormal mental states, that signal to the service, deal with the person now. Don't tell them to take a ticket and wait 6 weeks to get a service. Prioritise those that have the most urgent need for care. Yeah. So you can build in the services. Now, on the other end, you can also see what your service is doing. So such systems also collect statistics about the quality of care, the timeliness of care, how safety is being attended to, who you're actually seeing, what outcomes you're achieving. Cool. So the value to those who fund, well, those who run services and those who fund services, is getting real-time information about what service is being provided to which people and delivering what outcome. Now, very few of our existing service systems have any data like that. In mental health, almost none have that kind of service data available, those service metrics. So there's a great value here, we would argue, for users of the service in empowering their own care and driving their service provision and really shifting the emphasis in care from more and more assessment to more effective interventions. Less time on being asked what the problem is and more time on trying to fix the problem, but also a major advance in the quality improvement business for mental health services by having real-time data, feeding back what you're doing well at the service level where your problems are, but also feeding back to funders what is really going on, what is really working for people on the ground in particular services and what's not, so you can fix it.
I'm chatting today with Ian Hickey about Project Synergy. Ian's co-authored supplement on Project Synergy is available at mja.com.au, where it is completely open access. Ian has also written an editorial on Uberization of mental health care, which you can also find on the NJA website. Back to our chat. So you've done a series of trials. What's the feedback been like from the service providers for a start?
I'd make the comment service users. Patients, people, service users, whatever terminology we use, consumers, they love it. Right.
Good.
They love it in particularly mental health. Here they are being empowered, providing information, finally telling their story, not being told they can only have one problem, that can be dealt with in one way. And so the service user end is very positive and the co-design and working with populations is very positive. The service providers is an interesting thing. What I would say is the smart ones, the committed ones, immediately look and go, oh, I'm not sure I knew that about my service. I'm not sure that we've set our service up right. We're going to have to think about how our service is actually organised. We're going to have to change what we do to make the most use of this tool. Now, some look at it and go, oh, I didn't really want to change the service. Could you just replace my electronic medical record? Could you just replace my administrative data set? Could you just do something else but not really change the way that we do business? Now, this is not a substitute for an electronic medical record.
No.
It's not a substitute for a clinic management system.
No.
The trouble is when people turn on a computer, that's what they're used to seeing. They think that's what digital healthcare is. They think it's either an administrative clinic system or an electronic medical record. This is not. This is a clinical system to use with people to change the pathway of clinical care. So I would say the progressive services and the progressive clinicians, many clinicians, of course, particularly in the private sector, have already moved to using their own personal technologies, mobile phones, other things, to stay in contact with people. In the public sector, very slow. The public sector is locked into old EMR systems, rigid systems, doesn't talk to each other, doesn't communicate actively with users of the service. More of a struggle for many of the public sector health services. More of the private sector are more willing, more of the private clinicians are more willing. So the more bureaucratic, the more institutional you are, people go, oh, really?
Yeah.
Do we really have to behave this way? Can't we just get people to line up at the clinic at 9 o'clock and have them all come and do what they usually do? You know, can't they just behave the way that we normally want them to behave? No. And it is interesting that now, I mean, once again, Prime Minister Morrison has put emphasis on youth suicide prevention and suicide prevention more generally and enhanced mental health. You know, the community demand to do a better job is profound. Existing systems, particularly very institutional-based systems, very rigid clinic-based systems, hospital-based systems, very limited GP systems, just aren't going to cut it in the 21st century. They're just not fit for purpose. And we've had this marvellous tool arrive called health information technologies, Now we've got to work out what the hell to do with it, how to actually deploy it. So the other comment I was making about Uberization, I'm not necessarily saying Uberization is a good thing. It's going to happen. It transforms things. We're arguing that simply a profit-driven approach or just a change that happens that isn't well evaluated has its own risks and its own difficulties. What we're arguing and what Project Synergy is about is actually testing and trying to find out what might work best in Australian healthcare kind of settings, and many of those are relevant to worldwide settings, to adaptation elsewhere in the world, where the demand or the gap between the demand for services, the provision of services, is even more profound in most countries than it is in Australia. We're arguing that if the process of co-design and co-production goes well, you can end up with better products than if you just have a simple profit-driven or disruptive technology arrive under a simple private capital model.
So what happens next, Ian? Where is it going to go now?
So I think the challenges in Australia is to try and work in a number of the key environments, particularly with the new primary health networks, with PHNs in rural and regional Australia, particular populations with the sort of stepped care models that we have out of general practice and psychological care. Can we drive a much greater provision of high-quality mental health care actually through these systems? So they provide the glue between service users and service providers to continuously work in real time on getting better outcomes. I mean, I love using technology with my own patients in my own setting, but people come back to me all the time with evidence that what you said didn't work. It's not working. Yes. Here's the evidence. Let's do different. In my individual situation, what you said in general sounded okay, but it's not working. So what do we do different? How do we modify what we do in real time, not with great delays? And we agree about what the outcomes of interest are. They might be reducing suicidality. They might be getting back to school, back to work. They might be working with other sorts of providers to get the right kind of multidisciplinary care. The point here is to drive much better quality care at scale by having this sort of real-time innovation, so-called measurement-based care. So not only is it highly personalised, it's also measurement-based. You bring the measurement back into the system. But to do that, you need to do the first bit. And what is really emphasised here is the co-design, co-production bit. You can't just tell people what to do. I don't know if people have noticed. It doesn't work really in healthcare. you should lose weight, you should stop smoking, you should exercise more. It doesn't really, you should take the tablets. That doesn't really work.
No.
And it certainly doesn't work in mental health care in that kind of way, just telling people to do it. And certainly with technologies, people are well aware of the rapidly changing nature of technologies, the different ways that people use technologies. You need to be working with the relevant groups in various ways. So our work with veterans is different to our work with young people. Our work with disadvantaged groups is different to our work in other areas. I would say, generally speaking, though, a lot of the assumptions that people make that only young people can use technologies are rubbish.
Yeah.
That increasingly what's clear is the extent to which we all use technologies. And there are issues in Australia about the quality of the telecommunication systems, which is going to be one of the really big issues for healthcare.
Indeed, yes.
Won't be how good is your hospital. It's going to be how good is your broadband network and how good is your telecommunications and how affordable is it. I think it's going to become one of the big issues in healthcare as it is in education. These are the things that the future economies in these areas will depend on. Hopefully we'll have less discussion of what does a hospital bed cost and more discussion of actually do we have the telecommunications infrastructure in place for people to be able to use these sort of advances. And this is a really serious issue. It's interesting in many parts of the developing world. We have work ourselves in Colombia and South America. Mm-hmm. The quality of the telecommunications is better than it is in many parts of Australia. It also, there are other issues and other challenges that arise here, but the ones we are focused on are the clinical and the co-production, co-design, but there are other issues that we need to be cognizant of in the telecommunications industries that will be relevant.
What would you like it to look like in 5 years' time?
In 5 years' time, there are two aspects to this, is that most of the areas of mental health care have access and do use effective health information technologies of this type. Mm. Whether they use this particular platform or other analogous ones, not really the issue, but that those particular platforms have been co-designed and co-produced for the relevant populations in Australia. They're not generic. They're not simple apps. So one of the problems when people, again, look at these kind of technologies, they think it's a simple app for mindfulness or a simple app for sleep-wake cycle or a simple app for alcohol or drug reduction. It's not. They're not very personalised and people get bored silly with them, and they're only a small part of the problem. As distinct from tracking the whole nature of the person's problem and their pathway or their journey through care to recovery,
yes,
and then relapse prevention as you go on. So what we would hope for in 5 years' time is the wide deployment of these systems in association with any of our major innovations, that they would have this capability. And that basically, if you were running a service that did not have this capability, you'd be running a 20th century service in the 21st century. You'd be running an old taxi in the era of Uberization. You know, you'd be running, yep, an old hotel in the era of Airbnb. And basically, you should go out of business. In our area, I think governments and funders should be saying, now look, that's just not good enough anymore. It's not empowering, it's not engaging, it doesn't actually deliver style of care that is high quality and more equitable when we have a better option available. So I think Australia is a country of innovation. This is a chance to go from innovation, of which we've had much, and I must say in the mental health area, we've had many, many good examples. A lot of good work has gone on in Australia through a lot of good organisation in the non-government and academic sectors. Now we need to go to scale. These things need to become part of the health system,
yeah,
not just at the periphery. Just like, and hence I use the Uberization thing, is that, you know, Uber has totally disrupted the taxi industry and the hire car industry, you know.
Yes.
And actually it's driven improvements in the traditional industry,
yeah,
as well as creating the convenience and the alternative. And it's actually put quality at the top, quality and price, you know, affordability, accessibility,
yeah,
at the top. So the impact of not only having these systems available, but what I'd like to see in 5 to 10 years is a dramatic improvement in the accessibility and quality of services as a consequence of using these technologies, that we all get off our bottoms and deliver better care at scale.
Who pays for it, Ian?
In most situations, these things will be paid for by third-party insurers. Now, in Australia, that's largely going to be federal government-based agencies. Now, whether that's through direct subsidisation through the Department of Health, through things like Medicare-type mm-hmm. systems, whether it's through the organisations that they fund, Veterans Affairs, Headspace, through the states, through our local health districts, they're likely to be payers. Whether other private insurers, whether our big insurers, Medibank, private, mm-hmm. Bupa, or other private health insurers become payers, these are likely to be who funds. It's not likely, and there's no evidence anywhere in the world, that the cost gets transferred directly to the user. Those sort of systems don't have a future.
Yeah.
So we're not talking about increasing out-of-pocket costs here for users. These sort of systems are really the sort of things that sit behind healthcare systems, like electronic prescribing does, like,
yes,
EMR, electronic medical records do, like all the other things that we do, where really the system cost is built into the cost of healthcare by those providers. Now, at the end of the day, we would argue these are better options for government than many of the government and for private insurers than many of the options they've currently got on the table that we're tied into very inefficient and bad costs. So we'd hope we see a movement from some of the intrinsic costs at the moment that are part of our healthcare system and in mental health, to uptake of these types of systems in the future. And in fact, much of the cost is in the development of these systems, and
yeah,
this will happen worldwide through private capital, but also through governments and investment. Then the deployment will be a choice in particular areas. But I think one of the interesting things is, if the Australian government doesn't get off its bottom and support these things, they will help on elsewhere. These things are not limited by which country you live in.
No,
you know, one of the other interesting things is people can go purchase them, or insurers or others can go purchase them from overseas providers in various ways. So we have a preference, of course, that Australian government systems support, either through Medicare, through primary health networks, through support for the key agencies, through state systems or federal systems, not that individuals have to, in any sense, go out and buy or, you know, license these particular types of advances. I think, as I say, that those sort of models are not really viable anywhere in the world, and they're not likely to be viable in Australia.
Thanks, Ian.
Okay, thanks for your time.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.